you can, if you desire, you can upgrade these to high-speed devices like bipolar RAMs, getting down to the 1670 nanosecond. If you use microprogram sequencers, such as the 2909, three will be required at about, again, about $3 each. That will give you up to address, microprogram addressing capability up to 4K words. That plus using RAM in your control store in a pipeline fashion with a register means that with currently available 250 nanosecond 2102s, you could run a 300 nanosecond microcycle very comfortably. If you went to faster parts, you could run 250 down to 200 nanosecond microcycles. Now this is with relatively inexpensive commercially available parts. I mean, and commercially available, not today, but have been available for a year or so. In summary, my intent here is to stir up some revolutionary thinking. I hope so. I can't find my last foil, but that's the way it goes. Here we go. Okay, again, this is the thing to keep in mind, the fact that you can have a 360 and have your hobbyist S100 I/O bus all at the same time. The real power of the 360 lies in its instruction set and architecture, and not in the instruction set in the sense that it has fancy instructions. It's that when you calculate an address or a number, here's 32 bits per whack, or the fact that you can do double indexing. Now, even if you ran your microprogram slowly at, say, 300 nanosecond microcycles, or if you used less expensive 2102s and ran it at 500 nanoseconds, you can still do some very powerful instructions in a relatively short period of time. The 500 nanoseconds per microcycle for a machine like this compares directly with the 500 nanosecond clock period time of your 8080. The only difference is that you're doing 32-bit adds or 32-bit add and shift operations for a hardware multiplier divide. The estimated cost of a machine like this is of the order of $500, and that depends a lot on how much you buy in quantity, how much you can connive with your friends, and how much you can scrounge. But $500 is a fairly good figure. There is assistance available for things like writing the microprogram. The Raytheon has had the microcode assembler, RAYASM, out since July of 76. Now this doesn't have a 360 instruction set already emulated. You have to write the program. But this will allow you to write microprograms up to 65K long, which is rather long for a microprogram, and up to 96 bits wide. Just a moment. Got something on that. Now this is available currently on time sharing. And it operates like so, normal time-sharing mode. You have, in the microassembler, instead of having just your program, you have a program and a symbol table or definitions file, so that it's an assembler without personality. You define the personality, you define the mnemonics of the assembler, and then you define the program, so that when you're designing your machine, you lay out your microprogram control word, you define the various bit fields in this definitions file, then you write your microprogram here. It goes to the normal time sharing computer path, ultimately generates a PROM programming tape, and you can program the PROM, or you can get out an object tape which comes out in hexadecimal, which you could interpret with a microcomputer to create the pattern in your control RAM. The source deck for this is available if you would want to try and translate it into your own 8080 or whatnot language. It is written in PL1, which is a neat block structured language. Unfortunately, there's no 8080 compilers for it except PLM. You might be able to convert it to PLM if you can handle the string handling. Okay, it's available on 9-track mag tape, which you can dump to cards at your local center, or it's $200. With that you get a 9-track mag tape with the source deck on it. You get a set of listings and a theory of operation manual and a good luck charm, in the sense that for that price you're obviously not getting 40 hours with the factory support, but it is readable and it can be translated, I'm sure, into microcomputer language.
What kind of machine was it set up to run on?
The microassembler?
Yeah.
It was set up to run on a 370, meaning it was set up to run on NCSS time sharing 370 machines.
Well, like I have access to a Cyber 6400, so a big machine is no problem.
Yeah. Okay, it doesn't require a big machine per se. It simply requires a machine that has a PL1 compiler on it. Okay, so that if your machine can compile PL1, or if you can you can convert it to ALGOL, it will run on that.
One doesn't really need a special assembler. Most any natural assembler will assemble this stuff anyway.
Good, that's a good point. Right, if you're dollar limited, you can do quite well with a regular macro assembler. The micro assembler has got some extra features built in, but that's not absolutely crucial. That's an excellent point that on various of the mini computers I know. Do you know of any on microcomputers, macro assemblers? At any rate, there are macro assemblers available on mini computers that can be converted to this service. Essentially, you're trying to ease the problem of creating the bit patterns in the control ROM. Finally, come again?
What about prospective time sharing users software? In other words, the language, how to fill up this, how to import it?
What about using it on?
Instruction words or how to format the formatting statement.
Yeah. Well, one of the advantages of going the time sharing route is that you do get a lot of support from the time sharing people. They sell a program that's up and running, time on the machine, and support in dealing with the problems.
Can I go to them and get what I will need right at myself at my desk, and then go back to them? How much do I have to?
We'd have to go into detail all the things that you would need, but you can get support in writing your code, running it, debugging it, that sort of thing.
Do I understand correctly then that it would be legal for a hobbyist to sell a micro program for a person building their own 360 emulator?
Sure. I see no reason why not. The question is, would it be legal for someone to sell a micro program for somebody for other people building their 360 emulators? And the answer is, I see no reason why not. It's simply a piece of software.
This is not how IBM makes a 360, so it really doesn't matter.
Right.
It's not the same machine.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. It's totally different from the way that IBM has built them internally, has the way they've configured the hardware. So it's just simply another program.
All you have to do is look at the 470.
That's an excellent example. Right. Right. Those are two excellent examples. The AMDAL 470 and the RCA Spectra 70 are two. They're intended to be 360 compatible, and they've succeeded fairly well. Well, in one case. Pardon? Okay, the Memorex 40 to emulate the 360 40. I'm really not sure. I think they had some things of their own in, but I'm not sure at all. Okay. So, lastly, I've just got a little slide here that says, this is out of a magazine article that shows how you can put together a little 16-bit machine out of about 25 chips using 4-bit slices. In this case, the sequencer is just, again, our little synchronous counter, some PROMs, and some TTL. It is not that difficult. I would direct you to the Electronic Design September 1976 for the first of a three-part series on how to design your own microprogram microprocessor.
Yeah. Does that 8080 IO channel controller going to be any problem for things like DMAs with disks? Is it going to slow it down because you have complex data?
Well, let's see what that looks like again. The question is, will the 8080 channel controller slow down things like disks or run into problems in that direction? Okay, we have it shown here. There are several options. One of them is that you can, if you have a disk that can communicate with the S100 bus, you can buffer it in local memory and then transfer from local memory through the interface to the 360 memory. Alternatively, you can transfer directly from the S100 through some sort of a high-speed buffer interface on into the 360 memory. If you have a very high-speed disk, such as the newer Trident series storage modules that go at a 10 megahertz bit rate, then you've got problems. Then the 8080 probably wouldn't handle it. But at that point, you're spending $7,000 to $10,000 for the disk, so you probably wouldn't worry too much about designing a specific channel controller for that particular device. The 360 will allow you up to 256 individual channel controller processors, in theory. They've never installed more than seven, because that would be a bit much, because each channel controller can have up to 256 peripherals on it. So you can create a gigantic empire if you really have the money. Question?
We've talked a little bit about speed. How, in general, would an emulated machine compare to the speed of the Acme 360?
Okay, the interesting thing about the 360, 370 series is that they all have the same instruction set, and the model you buy determines the speed. Like the old 360-30 was very slow because it was, I think you could put an 8080 in there and it would run at about the same speed. Because, and that's quite serious, because it had a huge microprogram and it had a simple 8-bit wide ALU function, and so it would go through and it would beat things to death slowly until it finally got the instruction executed. So almost anybody could outperform a 360-30. The 360-40 and 44 series are about on par with a mini computer, with a plain vanilla style mini computer. When you get up to the 50s and you get up into the 370 series, like the 158 and 168, and you've got 70 nanosecond instruction cycle times, that's very fast. The main thing is that you have a very direct trade-off between dollars and speed. Okay, you can. I am not as up on exactly where a machine like this would fall running at, say, a full tilt for the 2901s. I would guess it to fall at around the 145, 370, 145, or the older 360-50. Okay. Now, if you're running the slower microcycle times, like the 500 nanosecond microcycle times, my guess is that you would fall in somewhat below the 360-40. And that's just an off-the-wall guess. Yes?
Do you have an estimate of the number of microcycles for the 2901 system to use a registered memory expression?
Okay, the question is there an estimate for the number of microcycles required for, let's say, a memory to a register to memory instruction using the 2901s in this procedure? Okay, if you run an 8-bit wide data path, which is, it's rather narrow, but it keeps your hardware count down if cost is of main importance. It would take you 4 memory accesses to get the instruction. It would take you another 4 to put away the data. Let's say you're storing a full 32 bits. So there you have 8 memory cycles, which would take about 16 microcycles. And then you'd have, say, 3 or 4 to fetch and interpret. So if you're running an 8-bit wide data path, it would take you, let's say, 20 microcycles. If you're running a 16-bit wide data path, it would take you a little over half that. You would be down to 8 and 4, 12. And that's for a 32-bit register-to-memory operation. Now, for the usual thing that's thrown out is, for instance, on the 8080, is the 8080 is very fast. It takes only 2 microseconds to do a register-to-register. Well, I can play those games too. So in this, you would take 2 memory accesses to get your instruction, which is typically 4 microcycles, and then let's say 1 to interpret and 1 to execute. So it would take you 6 microcycles, and if we're running a full bore quarter microsecond instruction time, it would take you 1.5 microseconds to do a 32-bit register-to-register add. But I think you've touched on it with the register-to-memory operations are the key. So we're talking about, again, of the order of 15 to 20 microcycles per instruction.
Is the effective address computed in the 2901s?
Yes, the effective address is computed in the 2901s. The way that you would typically do that is that the 2901s have architecture which is very similar to the 6701, the slide that you saw previously. It has 16-word, 2-port RAM, an ALU, and a working register called the Q register. Typically, you would use the Q register as a working buffer. You would put your displacement into the Q register and add in your base register and your index register. Then use the contents of the Q register as the memory address. Question? Yes. In the proceedings, at the end of the paper is the are some references. The main one is the 360 manual, which is also included in the list. Looks about like this, available from your local IBM dealer for a few dollars. And it says IBM System 360 Principles of Operation, and it takes you right through all of the gory details. So it gives you an instruction manual for going about it. I have some copies up here of some Xeroxes that I've run off of some of those 3 tutorial articles that were in electronic design. I also have a few of the Raytheon manuals covering the 2900 series bipolar products. And I have a couple of manuals covering RayOSM. So keeping that in mind, if you're serious, please come up and clean me out. Okay. Question?
I'd like to ask for 2 minutes, if I may.
Okay.
I wasn't here for the bus standard talk that was Saturday at 10 o'clock when I was in July. But I have a handout on a 16-bit bus that was designed by the University of Illinois. Which is something that wasn't discussed before. What does that memory bus look like on the 360 side?
Okay.
It is a 16-bit bus. So it looks like a very simple TTL universe. I don't know processor status, bits on the bus, it's processor independent. It's all the asynchronous you have to speak to everyone. So I like to leave this up on the front table. Yeah, it's nuts. There was a short letter in March, like, there's also an article on it in the January 77th computer magazine. And I've gone and gotten the...
What we're going to do is let's put them up here on the table. I'll put my stuff up on the table. We'll have a land rush. Okay.
It's a,
yeah.
Bus,
Wait. The land rush hasn't begun. Okay. Yeah. 16, excuse me. Okay.
It's a 16-bit data bus standard. 16-bit address field. It could be expanded to 20 bits or 21 bits. And they have used it for several years in their electronic design lab. It's been worked on. They use a DEC-compatible CARDIS as the actual physical implementation.
Okay.
On the expanding of the address field, how hard would that be to do with the original standard?
With the what standard?
With the original.
There are four pins that are spare right above the client's address bit and that are set aside for expansion. We'd obviously have problems. Old style memory boards were not decoding those pins, but they are right there between the data, the 16 data bits and the 16 address bits for that purpose.
Okay, so theoretically, any system would be built with a larger address capability to plug in and use the original 16.
Right.
Okay. Can that can accommodate a 24-bit address?
No. It can. All right. You have 20 bits. It is also byte addressable. That is, there is a right low byte, right high byte line. You can take the lowest bit off the address and use that to control those two lines, and then only have the upper bits from that, the upper significant bits from that.
So the original 16 bits address is words.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't mean to. Okay, the S100 bus that I was talking about in the device controller is just one possibility. This might be an interesting proposal for the 360 memory bus. The only limitation would be that with 20 bits, you can only address a megabyte. So you have to take that into account.
Something you can do with this bus, it just occurs to me, is it uses the DEC dual card as a standard. Now DEC has also a standard card, the DEC quad card. You could put two of these together and you have a 32-bit wide data bus with enough fudging you can make it up to a 22-bit address field also. It's not 24 bits, but it's pretty close.
I'd like to make one other comment along this line. In parallel with this talk, apparently there's been some activity out in the field. In the session this afternoon, one of the speakers will be discussing hardware that's available to do this. It's the vacuum machine. It will be presented by Mr. Tom Pittman. So I would invite you all back after lunch to a continuation of this session on microprogram microprocessors for hobbyists. One other question?
Does Raytheon have anything in the works for hardware development systems for the 2500 series?
Yes, we do.
Carbon copy of AMD or something a little better?
Well, let's say we hope it's a little better.
When?
Soon. Okay, wait, whoa. Take it easy. Okay, for those of you who are serious, we've got some of the 2901. A lot of serious people.
Excuse me.
That takes care of all the serious people. RASM. Yeah, assembler, microassembler. That's it. Boy, I don't have to carry anything back.
Isn't that what you wanted?
That's the idea.
All you have to do is worry about getting out with your life.
I know. I'm trying to fade off into the distance here so I don't get trampled.